Kreisel Hall, known as the cradle of chamber music in America, has provided musicians with the opportunity to immerse themselves in the chamber repertoire since 1902, realizing founder Franz Kneisel's vision for over 100 years. Born in Bucharest, violinist Franz Kneisel studied at the Vienna Conservatory and emigrated from Berlin in 1885, the year he also formed the Kneisel Quartet, the first fully professional string quartet in America, famous for the precision of its ensemble and the restrained elegance of its performances. By the time Kneisel arrived in Blue Hill, Maine in 1899, the small town by the sea had attracted a handful of prominent summering musicians who formed the nucleus of the budding musical colony. Kneisel built a house overlooking Blue Hill Bay several years later and founded a summer music school, offering students time for individual practice and lessons, chamber music rehearsals, and ensemble evenings performing chamber works. However, by 1922, Kneisel's school had outgrown his home and studio. Felix Kahn, a friend and amateur cellist, built him a large hall on the side of Blue Hill Mountain, a building with a resonant wood interior that has been the center of the school's activities ever since. That from Kneisel Hall's website. Deborah Reeder was a very talented young cellist when she was given the opportunity for summer study at Kneisel Hall in Maine, and she will never forget her experience there. At the age of 17, she studied back at home with Lorne Monroe when he was principal cellist of the Philadelphia Orchestra, and she eventually became a member of that eminent orchestra herself. Deborah Reeder was a founding member of the celebrated Philadelphia Trio, this ensemble. And as a performer with a preeminent career, Deborah Reeder has never forgotten her foundational experience at Kneisel Hall. And having, as she did, a home in the endless mountains in the charming town of Eaglesmere, she wanted to offer young people the special opportunity for an intensive chamber music coaching experience in a truly lovely mountain setting. She recognized, of course, the natural beauty of the surroundings with the natural 230-acre spring-fed lake and forested lands abounding. So in 1976, she did establish Music in the Mountains, a summer music program, at first for cellists, but when Barbara Sonnies, another member of the Philadelphia Trio, joined the faculty, the offerings expanded to include violin, and Elizabeth Keller eventually came to the program as a pianist. It wasn't just the natural beauty of Eaglesmere, or the distinction of the faculty members, or the power of the music, or the high quality of the students, but all of those elements together, plus something that cannot be quantified. And the word the alumni use is magic. The magic that made an indelible mark on those who took part season after season. You'll hear the word magic or magical very shortly. In anticipation of a concert at the David Dwyer Center in Eaglesmere on Friday, August 7th, as part of the Eaglesmere Friends of the Arts performance series, we had a chance to speak by phone with violist Andrew Weaver, a member of the Eaglesmere Chamber Players and professor of musicology at the Catholic University of America, who has not missed a single chance to return to perform with other musicians who had equally memorable experiences studying at Music in the Mountains. First, we want to learn how young Andy became involved with music before he was able to attend this very special music camp in Sullivan County.
Basically, my mother drew me to music. I have an older sister who started playing violin when she was in second grade, because she was a very brilliant child and my mom wanted something to challenge her. And so she started, where she's 2 years older than I am, she started on violin. The next year I was in first grade and I don't know how the decision was made that I was going to start playing a string instrument as well. My mom to this day swears that I chose the viola. I did start on viola, which is very unusual for someone that young, especially in, this was 1980. But I think really my mom didn't want my sister and I playing the same instruments. But yeah, I started on viola in 1980. It was so unusual for people to play viola that young that they actually didn't make E strings, the lowest string on the viola, small enough for the instrument that I was using. So I played a three-string viola for much of my early years playing. But it was really guided by my parents, by my mom specifically. My sister, Janet, who eventually switched to viola, she also went to Music in the Mountains. She went to Music in the Mountains before I did. And we went together for a couple of years.
How did you discover the program?
Through our viola teacher. My viola teacher, Evelyn Jacobs Louise, was very active in the Philadelphia scene. She was principal violist of the opera, Philadelphia Opera. And so I'm pretty sure that's probably how she, but that might be how she became acquainted with Barbara and Debbie, because they also played with the opera. But Evelyn also played chamber music with them. And I think Evelyn was one of their important recruiters for violists.
And so, at what level were you then when you first went?
So I was 13 years old. So I had just finished seventh grade. So I was in middle school, which was pretty much, that was a normal age for the camp generally ran from 13. And then there were sometimes some people who were in their freshman year of college. So I was still young. I had been playing, I started playing in first grade. So I'd been playing for a while, but I had a lot to learn when I first went to Music in the Mountains. And I did learn a lot going to Music in the Mountains.
Did you divide your time with Debbie, whom we know as a cellist, or Barbara?
Right.
How did that work out in terms of what you needed?
So basically, we would be divided into ensembles, and Barbara and Debbie would see where our levels were and put us with the players who would support us the most. And then we would have rehearsals with pretty much both of them equally. Barbara and Debbie would split their time among the various ensembles. I don't remember either one of them being more important than the other or spending more time with the other, because what we were learning in Music in the Mountains wasn't so much technique. You know, that's what we got in our private lessons before we went to Music in the Mountains. What we got at the camp was really learning how to play chamber music, how to play with other people, how to really experience that very intimate style of playing where there's no conductor, where it's up to the players to communicate, you know, just with their eyes and with their bodies and to make that music. And that's something that, you know, it didn't matter that neither Barbara nor Debbie were violists, that they could still impart that. And for that reason, Music in the Mountains is without question in my life probably the most foundational musical education I ever got. You know, playing chamber music, it's so different from playing in an orchestra where you're playing with a big group of people, everyone, you know, your section is all playing the same thing. There's a conductor who's basically making the interpretive decisions. In chamber music, you're the only one playing your part. There is no conductor. You know, you really have to meld with the other players. And that the level of playing that I got as a teenager, you know, in Music in the Mountains, it propelled me into my musical career. I mean, there's that's not an overstatement.
Did they model that way of making music by playing as a trio, for example, for you?
Yes. Generally, there would be, very often they would give a concert while we were there as part of the Friends of the Arts, one of the regular concerts. They would perform that, and we would go to that. I'm trying to think of if they actually played with us, and I don't think that happened to a large extent, but we certainly saw the way that they interacted with each other and got to also see them perform.
It was a number of weeks, and you kept going back.
Yes, it was 2 weeks, so it was in August, and I did. I kept going back. I went, you know, until I graduated from high school. I started in seventh grade. My last year was when I was in 11th grade. I would have gone after I graduated high school, but I couldn't because I had to go off to college and my college started early. But I couldn't imagine not going back, you know, because it was such a highlight of every year to have that experience, to not just have the musical experience, that was important, but also the social experience is what I really remember the most when I think back on that camp. And what really attracted me to come back when Debbie called me in 2012, you know, as a teenager, a 13-year-old geeky, you know, not very popular kid who didn't really fit in and didn't really know his place in the world, Music in the Mountains gave me a place where I belonged, where we all were a community, and just the memories I have of laughing and just hanging out and spending time with people who are to this day, some of them are still very good friends. That really is why I kept going back, because it was just a social, it was a communal experience that I didn't have anywhere else in my life. And that also laid such an important foundation for who I was becoming as a human being.
That's the foundation of music making. If you don't know who you are or where your place is, what kind of music are you really going to make ultimately, right?
Right, exactly.
Did you stay with families? Did you stay in the theater dormitories? How did they house you?
We stayed in what was called the Players Lodge. There's one big house pretty much in the smack dab center of Eaglesmere, right next door to the Sweet Shop, which is the one sort of restaurant, but also a place you can get ice cream. So it was a huge house. I loved that house. We all stayed there. There's lots and lots of bedrooms. We never even completely filled the house. But that house also holds a dear place in my heart. When we first started going back for the alumni concerts, the first 2 years, so in 2012 and 2013, we stayed in that house. Unfortunately, it wasn't in as good condition, so we didn't stay there after that, but we all lived together. You know, that was part of the experience too, just spending that time and doing, you know, doing chores together. And yeah, I mean, that was really the camped experience, I think. We all spent all of our time together. We, you know, would just hang out in the Players Lodge in the evening. We would go for walks around, you know, in nature. We would go to the beach together. We could go in a rowboat or a sailboat. I never went sailing, but you could, or paddle boats. That's something that was one of my speeds. Yeah, and so sometimes Barbara and Debbie would arrange things that we would do as a group, but also a lot of the time was just us finding things to do. And I just remember just laughing, just playing silly games and just enjoying each other's company.
And it sounds like music then wasn't in a separate compartment. Music was just part of your lives.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's a really good way of putting it. You know, the musical component and the social component, they were all one and the same. You know, and I think that's especially for chamber music. That's how you make good chamber music, by really knowing each other and spending that time together. I think that was such a good model, you know, moving forward about how to really make great music, is to build that sort of bond.
I'd love it if you tell our listeners what you do now, and then we can ask from that in retrospect, how did your time at Music in the Mountains inform what you do now?
So my main job now is I'm a professor of musicology at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. I went to college for viola performance, but halfway through college, I realized that I really liked the academic side of music even more than I liked just being in the practice room 4 hours a day. So I realized I wanted to do that. I pursued a PhD in musicology, and that's sort of my main gig, is researching. I just came back from a trip to Poland and Germany, where I was looking at 16th century music prints. But, you know, as I said, I went to college for performance specifically. And I will say that I don't think I would have done that. I really don't think that music would have been as much of a passion as something I really wanted to do if it weren't for Music in the Mountains. So for that reason alone, I think I can say that Music in the Mountains is absolutely foundational in propelling me into the career that I have. But even so, a lot of what I do as a musicologist is really study the music, really get inside the music. And having such a strong foundation in chamber music, that helped give me that. You know, just as a performer playing chamber music, you have to be really fully aware of what's going on and what the other parts are doing. And that sort of approach to engaging with music and being a part of the music is what carries over into my work as a musicologist.
How about the balance then? Do you play performances on the side? Do you do concerts and play recitals still as you are doing your professorial work?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. When I was in college, it was important to me when I decided to pursue musicology, I still wanted to finish the performance degree. That was important to me to have that credential as well as the scholarly credentials. But when I went to my PhD program at Yale, I very specifically told myself, okay, I'm a scholar now. I'm not going to be playing viola. And then the funniest thing, I was at Yale within the first week, I walked into the music library, and there in the music library was Rachel Siegel, who is one of the violinists in the Eagles Mere Chamber Players. She was there at Yale pursuing graduate work in violin. And so immediately word got out that there was a violist in town. And within a week, I was in a string quartet at Yale. And so the whole time that I was in my graduate work, I was still playing. Every single year, I was playing. In fact, one semester in my coursework, I took lessons. So as much as I thought that I was going to put it aside, I didn't. And I couldn't. At Catholic University, I will play with the orchestra. I have played with graduate student string quartets if there was not a violist available. I try to play as much as I can. I have to say try because I do have a lot of responsibilities. But I also perform with the Arlington Philharmonic in Arlington, Virginia. I'm the principal violist for that. That's probably my most regular gig. And aside from that, I play in churches and I do sort of what freelance stuff comes to me. So viola is still an important part of my life. Even if it's not my main gig, it's absolutely, I'm almost always doing something with viola.
I remember talking year after year with Debbie, and she would always come round and we would always get into talking about Johannes Brahms. And if we're thinking about viola, we know about Brahms and writing for the viola. Did you take anything away from your time there? And do you love Brahms at all?
Of course I love Brahms. I absolutely adore Brahms. I mean, it was more than anything, the Music in the Mountains gave me that deep, deep love of not just Brahms, but all of the German Romantic composers. That was really sort of the meat and potatoes of what we performed at Eaglesmere. And I did go through a small phase, you know, when I was early on in college where I thought, oh, the romantic stuff, that's just trite. You know, I'm more interested in the more edgy, you know, 20th century stuff or the early music, but I eventually came back to the romantic romantic music. I absolutely, it's deep in my soul too.
You did get a call and you were asked to come back. You at first were called Star Alumni. Isn't that how it began?
Yes. Yep, that's exactly. It was 2012. Out of the blue, I got a phone call from Debbie, whom I hadn't talked to in probably decades at that point. And she explained that, yeah, they weren't going to be doing the camp anymore. She wanted to bring back these Star Alumni. And I couldn't say no. I was so excited. You know, I could not wait to go back. And the remarkable thing is, you know, they always say you can't go back home again. Going back that summer, I was going back home. That first year, there was a large number of people. I don't know exactly how many, but more than 10 people that they brought back. And it was only a few days. It wasn't the full 2 weeks, but it felt like being back home, being back at camp. The experience was just as electric and just as magical. And yeah, we've been going back every year since. The only time we didn't go back was in 2020, for obvious reasons.
You've changed the name, and who's coming back this year then?
Okay, so for some time now, for several years now, we've had the same core group. There have been five of us, Rachel Siegel, Philip Carter on violins, me on viola, Mimi Morris Kim on cello, and Rachel Kame on piano. And Rachel Siegel and Mimi and I were all at Music in the Mountains together. And while I didn't meet Philip or Rachel until that first alumni year, I feel like I was at the camp with them because of how special, you know, it always is when we get together. So that's been the core group for many years now. I couldn't tell you exactly how many. Now, last year was unusual because a month or so before, maybe 2 months before our concert, Philip had some physical issues where he really had to take a break from playing. So we were able to find somebody to take his place, a violinist who was not a member of Music in the Mountains, but did have a family connection to Eagles Mere. His name is David Matthew Brown, and he clicked with us immediately. He already knew Mimi and Rachel, but it was just as magical last year. And David really wanted to come back, and this year Philip wanted to come back. So this year we have six of us. We have three violinists, and then me on viola, Mimi on cello, and Rachel on piano. And Philip is also a very good violist. So, and he has many years has sometimes done something on viola as well as violin. So that made us really excited because that meant with two violins and two violas and cello, and then we could do string quintets. So we're doing two string quintets on this program, one by Mozart and one by Mendelssohn. So it'll be fun having that extra person. It gives some of the violinists a bit of a break because they don't have to play as much. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to having a slightly larger group this year.
Tell us how you do it then. Obviously, you all practice and you're ready to roll when you get there, but how many days in advance do you get there and so forth?
We set the program usually many months in advance, usually by April or May at the latest is when we finalize what the program is going to be. So we can start practicing then. We usually have a week of rehearsals. For the past several years, our concert has been on Friday night. It used to be Sunday afternoon, but now it's Friday night. So lately we have been arriving Monday. We arrive Monday during the day. So we on Monday, we have sort of our first rehearsal where we just sort of read through everything. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday are intense rehearsing. Most of our days are given to rehearsing, and then we have the concert on Friday.
A couple of things, because there are people who are listening who will be in the audience for the performance. What should they be excited about?
So, you know, what should they be excited about? Well, I mean, we always try to have variety. An important part of our programming is that we always do individual movements. We don't do entire pieces. That is a heritage from the camp, because that's exactly how it works in the camp. But it's been important. We sometimes have conversations. Should we do whole pieces? But we always decide not to, because we like having the variety to have a lot of different ensembles, you know, so different combinations of players and instruments. And something that we've been doing a lot lately is we try to give more than just the traditional romantic music by dead white men. So we try to have a lot of diversity, you know, try to bring in pieces by women. We try to bring in things that are a bit, you know, less sort of what we think of as classical. Last year we did some Danish folk music that had been arranged by the Danish String Quartet. That went over, like, it was basically fiddle tunes, and that was a lot of fun. So we're doing another piece from that collection by the Danish String Quartet. We're doing a piece by William Grant Still, an African-American composer, called Dances of Panama, which is a very fun sort of Latin-inspired, you know, dance music. But then, of course, we have the most, as I said, we're doing a Mozart string quintet, the G minor string quintet, which is one of the most complex and really dark pieces. It's sort of unexpectedly dark for Mozart. We have, of course, we always try to have sort of really big crowd-pleasing things. You know, we're doing the finale of Robert Schumann's piano quintet. We used to always conclude the concert with a piano quintet because that got all of us on the stage. This year, that was a challenge because we wanted to have all of us on the stage at the end, but there's not a lot of chamber music for string quintet and piano. So Mimi had a very clever idea. She realized that J.S. Bach's sixth Brandenburg Concerto, which is basically a double concerto for two violas. And it's often played just with two violas and piano. And in fact, Philip and I played the first movement several years ago that way. But she realized that we could probably use the original orchestration and adapt it for us. The original orchestration of that work is the two solo violas, two viola da gambas, which is basically an early sort of cello-like instrument, and then cello and keyboard. So for the final piece on the concert, we're playing the finale, the third movement of the sixth Brandenburg Concerto. Philip and I will be playing the viola part. Rachel Siegel and David will be playing the gamba parts on violin. And then Mimi will be playing cello, and Rachel Kane will be playing piano. So we have a lot of variety going all the way back to Bach. We have a Haydn string quartet. We have some more recent stuff. We have a Kodály work for two violins and viola. And that's always important to Mimi, that she get a break. There's not a lot of chamber music that doesn't use cello. So if we can do anything where she can get a break, she appreciates that. I'd say, what's to be excited about? That was your question. Be excited about variety. Be excited about familiar, well-known pieces, but also be excited to hear some things that you've probably never heard before.
And let me just take you back. You've been back and playing and dedicated concert season to Debbie, who is remembered and will always be with you. Is that how it feels, that when you come back, she's, I don't mean in a spooky way, but she's with you?
Yes, she is absolutely with us. And perhaps even in a spooky way. Debbie was really into that mystical stuff. So we like to think that maybe she is with us in a spooky way. I think that's exactly what I think she would want us to feel. But she's absolutely 100% with us when we are playing, either when we're playing in Eaglesmere or when we get together sometimes and play in the Philadelphia area.
A lovely tribute to cellist Deborah Reeder, who passed away in January 2024, and who established Music in the Mountains and developed that music camp program with Barbara Sonnies, both members of the esteemed Philadelphia Trio. We heard from Dr. Andrew Weaver, violist and a member of the Eaglesmere Chamber Players, and a professor of musicology at the Catholic University of America, who has not missed a single chance to return to Eaglesmere to perform with other musicians who had that equally memorable experience studying at Music in the Mountains. There will be a concert on Friday, August 7th at 8 o'clock at the David Dwyer Center, 891 LaPorte Avenue in Eaglesmere, with the Eaglesmere Chamber Players. And as Andrew told us, there will be Haydn and Mozart and William Grant Still and Kodály and so much more. And if you have a chance, you can go to the website and find out the details and the directions and all the other programs that are being offered this summer by the Eaglesmere Friends of the Arts, co-founded by Deborah Reeder. So here's the website, emfoa.org, emfoa.org. That is the Eaglesmere Chamber Players performing on Friday, August 7th at 8 o'clock at the David Dwyer Center, 891 LaPorte Avenue, and that's in Eaglesmere, emfoa.org, Friday, August 7th at 8. Haydn, Mozart, Mendelssohn, there will be William Grant Still. Music of William Grant Still from The Dances of Panama for string quartet at the Seraphim String Quartet, but you'll be hearing members of the Eaglesmere Chamber Players featuring some of that music on Friday, August 7th at 8 p.m. at the David Dwyer Center in Eaglesmere. For more information, emfoa.org.